Mary Stuart by Alexandre Dumas. Chapter 1. Some royal names are predestined to misfortune. In France, there is the name Henry. Henry I was poisoned, Henry II was killed in a tournament, Henry III and Henry IV were assassinated. As to Henry V, for whom the past is so fatal already, God alone knows what the future has in store for him. In Scotland, the unlucky name is Stuart. Robert I, founder of the race, died at 28 of a lingering illness. Robert II, the most fortunate of the family, was obliged to pass a part of his life, not merely in retirement, but also in the dark, on account of inflammation of the eyes, which made them blood red. Robert III succumbed to grief, the death of one son, and the captivity of other. James I was stabbed by Graham in the Abbey of the Black Monks of Perth. James II was killed at the Siege of Roxburgh by a splinter from a burst cannon. James III was assassinated by an unknown hand in a mill, where he had taken refuge during the Battle of Sauchie. James IV, wounded by two arrows and a blow from a halberd, fell amidst his nobles on the battlefield of Flodden. James V died of grief at the loss of his two sons and of remorse for the execution of Hamilton. James VI, destined to unite on his head the two crowns of Scotland and England, son of a father who had been assassinated, led a melancholy and timorous existence between the scaffold of his mother, Mary Stuart, and that of his son, Charles I. Charles II spent a portion of his life in exile. James II died in it. The Chevalier St. George, after having been proclaimed King of Scotland as James VIII and of England and Ireland as James III, was forced to flee, without having been able to give his arms even the luster of a defeat. His son, Charles Edward, after the skirmish at Derby and the Battle of Culloden, hunted from mountain to mountain, pursued from rock to rock, swimming from shore to shore, picked up half naked by a French vessel, betook himself to Florence to die there, without the European courts having ever consented to recognize him as a sovereign. Finally, his brother, Henry Benedict, the last heir of the Stuarts, having lived on a pension of £3,000, granted him by George III, died completely forgotten, bequeathing to the House of Hanover all the crown jewels which James II had carried off when he passed over to the continent in 1688, a tardy but complete recognition of the legitimacy of the family which had succeeded his. In the midst of this unlucky race, Mary Stuart was the favorite of misfortune. As Brantome has said of her, whoever desires to write about this illustrious Queen of Scotland has, in her two very large subjects, the one her life, the other her death. Brantome had known her on one of the most mournful occasions of her life, at the moment when she was quitting France for Scotland. It was on the 9th of August, 1561, after having lost her mother and her husband in the same year, that Mary Stuart, Dowager of France and Queen of Scotland at 19, escorted by her uncles, Cardinals Guise and Lorraine, by the Duke and Duchess of Guise, by the Duc d'Aumale and M. de Nemours, arrived at Calais, where two galleys were waiting to take her to Scotland, one commanded by M. de Mevillon and the other by Captain Albuys. She remained 6 days in the town. At last, on the 15th of the month, after the saddest adieus to her family, accompanied by Messrs. d'Aumale, d'Elbeuf and Damville with many nobles, among whom were Brantome and Chatelard, she embarked in M. Mevillon's galley, which was immediately ordered to put out to sea, which it did with the aid of oars, there not being sufficient wind to make use of the sails. Mary Stuart was then in the full bloom of her beauty, beauty even more brilliant in its mourning garb, a beauty so wonderful that it shed around her a charm which no one whom she wished to please could escape, and which was fatal to almost everyone. About this time, too, someone made her the subject of a song, which, as even her rivals confessed, contained no more than the truth. It was, so it was said, by M. de Maisonfleur, a cavalier equally accomplished in arms and letters. Here it is. In robes of whiteness, lo, full sad and mournfully, went pacing to and fro beauty's divinity. A shaft in hand she bore from Cupid's cruel store, and he who fluttered round bore, o'er his blindfold eyes and o'er his head uncrowned, a veil of mournful guise, whereon the words were wrought, "You perish or are caught." Yes, at this moment Mary Stuart, in her deep mourning of white, was more lovely than ever, for great tears were trickling down her cheeks, as, weaving a handkerchief standing on the quarterdeck, she who was so grieved to set out, bowed farewell to those who were so grieved to remain. At last, in half an hour's time, the harbor was left behind, the vessel was out at sea. Suddenly Mary heard loud cries behind her, a boat coming in under press of sail, through her pilot's ignorance, had struck upon a rock in such a manner that it was split open, and after having trembled and groaned for a moment like someone wounded, began to be swallowed up amid the terrified screams of all the crew. Mary, horror-stricken, pale, dumb, and motionless, watched her gradually sink, while her unfortunate crew, as the keel disappeared, climbed into the yards and shrouds to delay their death agony a few minutes.